Thanks, everybody. Thanks for coming along. So I'm Damien Paul. I'm from the TAC, and I'm going to talk to you a bit about our claims model transformation, particularly the recovery branch of the TAC, so which is the branch that manages the claims of people who are mild to moderately injured. So just a bit of an overview of the TAC first. So we're the sole provider of personal injury insurance for transport accidents in Victoria. It's a no-fault scheme, as you know. We have a population in Victoria of about 5.5 million people, about 4.3 million registered vehicles. And the TAC invests in road safety and safer road infrastructure, as well as funding treatment and income and rehabilitation and lifetime care. I just wanted to quickly show you who our clients are.
There was a four-wheel drive on our side of the road heading towards us.
Unfortunately, someone cut the corner on a sharp bend, and I didn't see them coming.
Can't remember much. Hitting the power pole, catching fire.
Down a dirt road, through a fence and down a farm ditch.
And I was sitting there and I couldn't work out why my car was all bent.
Yeah, basically just ran into a couple of trees and broke my neck.
A broken jaw, a broken sternum.
Fourth degree burns on 45% of your body.
I smashed my kneecap.
One of the first things Rima said was, can you feel the baby moving?
And then waking up in my Elford with all these tubes coming out of me, so that's pretty much what I remember really, so...
I got told by, I get told by people, well, you've just got to learn to sit down. But when you're on the farm, you don't sit.
That tricky thing of having to describe to a room of strangers, you know, the impact of losing your baby, losing your daughter.
We're dealing with people who don't understand what ABI is all about.
Acquired brain injury.
Yeah.
I think people don't understand that as well as the person that's been involved in the accident, you know, it's also the other side of the family too that really makes their life change too.
I haven't had that sort of freedom of, you know, living by myself and probably extra time and TV that's not shared by the rest of the family, so I don't know what I'll do yet. But.
And more independence, get me out of the house and get my house bound, so it's, yeah, it's good.
I thought that's about the first person who's actually taken any notice of me in a huge amount of time.
The people I've dealt with, you know, support coordinators, case managers, they're pretty caring people. They want to help.
And now that I've got two young kids, it's important that I'm not just sitting on the couch so that I can see exactly what they're up to.
In August, we found out we were pregnant. It was scary, but really, really good.
I don't get the vibe that they're just doing it. It's just their job. I think, you know, the people I've dealt with have been keen to help me out, so, you know, no doubt they'll continue to do that.
A lot of people have tried to describe what it's like, you know, finally having a living baby after losing one. And it doesn't erase, you know, the grief or the sadness or anything, but it just adds so much good stuff.
Every day is a present and life is a gift you only get once.
Yep.
So you should use every day to the best you can.
That's just a brief snapshot of our clients and the client group. So our organisation manages the claims of people both seriously injured and people who recover and return to their lives. In terms of the claims division, in 2012-13, we paid out about $1 billion, $1.1 billion in claims payments, $11 billion of total liabilities. We have about 18,500 new claims a year, and last year there were 45,000 active claims. So in 2009, the TAC embarked on a pretty ambitious strategy called TAC 2015, and it had It was for three major reasons. So, firstly, it was about the relocation of the organisation from Melbourne to Geelong. It was also to engage a high percentage of new employees. So, in that really significant move from Melbourne to Geelong, there was a very large turnover of staff. And thirdly, and most importantly, there was a shift in thinking from traditional insurance-based practices to a greater focus on the whole of client and client outcomes. So client outcomes were introduced as our third corporate objective in 2009, so in addition to client experience and scheme viability. So the TAC 2015 strategy had three major components. Recovery, which is the area that I'll talk about largely today, which is for mild to moderately injured clients. Independence, which is for our severely injured clients. And also the service program, which I'll talk about as well. So the service program was focused on streamlining our processes and really was complementary to both recovery and independence. So the vision and objective for the recovery branch is really around supporting our clients to return to health and work as quickly as possible. The branch manages the claims of around 30,000 people, 30,000 active claims of people injured in motor vehicle accidents. And I guess the really significant shift that we undertook was to focus on people's individual needs to support them in achieving their health and return to work goals. So back in 2011, Sophie, who's here today, presented on the change from the benefit delivery branch to the recovery branch. And both Sophie and Bruce Crossett, who's also here today, were the chief architects, really, of that really significant change. So what changed? So back in 2009, when we were called the Benefit Delivery Branch, we had portfolios based on injury type. All claim movements were manual, and they were based on predefined timelines and events. There were multiple file handovers during the life of claim. Portfolio sizes and staff weren't aligned to client needs. Long tail claims were scattered across all teams, and there wasn't really a particularly large focus on early intervention or common law. So when the recovery model was launched then in 2010, when it became live in 2010, there were a number of very significant changes. So there was an algorithm to automatically segment claims. Portfolio sizes were differentiated to client needs. There was a risk screening tool for return to work, mental health and pain risk factors. There was a very significant focus on early intervention, on expectation setting, and, as I mentioned before, a very explicit focus on client outcomes. There was a large team created called Client Assist, which was for our high-volume clients. There were many fewer file handovers, and there was also the segmentation of long tail claims, as well as the earlier identification of common law. So again, just a short video on where we're up to with recovery, and then I'll talk to you a little bit about what's changed between 2011 and today.
I think that the new segmentation model has been really successful in being able to identify each client's needs up front at the start of their claim.
The first I knew about it, my eldest called me on the telephone, rang my mobile and said, "Daddy, Ethan's been hit by a train."
As a result of the recovery model, I'm much more client focused, and I try and focus on the individual circumstances of each client and try and tailor my approach to working with them to best fit their needs, rather than considering the client as simply a claim number.
The surgical team spoke with us and said that normal brain pressure is between 0 and 10, 20 and 30 they say is unsurvivable, unrecoverable, and Ethan's was over 100. They then brought him back to ICU, where Michelle and I got to obviously give him a cuddle and a kiss. We made the decision to turn the life support off. Ethan passed away straight away.
We have a much clearer understanding of the health benefits of returning to work. We're certainly working in partnership with the client rather than, I guess, directing their recovery. We're actually working alongside the client, walking with them, and it's really a collaboration.
The initial plan was that I would be off work over the Christmas period so myself, my wife and my three other children could regroup, and one of the cliches was to get back to normal, which we've since found that normal will never happen. We had to find a new normal.
The introduction of the Recovery Action Plan has been really successful, and this tool has really supported our staff in being able to have a holistic mindset about how we work with each client, and it supports us in identifying barriers that might be preventing a client from returning to work, and it encourages us to identify individualised strategies to help them get back to work.
Returning to work, getting up of a morning, having a shower, putting my uniform on, seeing the kids run down the passageway and see Dad back in uniform, "Oh, you're going to work, Dad," really makes me feel positive, really makes me feel like a man again.
So in 2009, the recovery model was first developed and then implemented in 2010. And as you can see from the video, a very significant focus on helping people to return to work sooner, and a significant investment in early intervention. Recovery phase two started then very quickly after recovery phase one, so there was a second phase. And there were that really focused on the systems, processes and people required to better support our clients' recovery. So we rolled out motivational interviewing to all of our case managers, all our rehab coordinators and claims advisors. We introduced a new tool called the Recovery Action Plan, which Erin talked to there, and that was focused on the barriers that people had around returning to health and work, and then the interventions that were necessary then to help them. It also reinforced the work that was done through motivational interviewing. And then there was also a focus on interventions and pathways, with a particular focus on mental health and persistent pain. Before I talk to you about what's changed with the recovery model since 2011 to today, I just also wanted to talk about the new service program, which is the complementary program to both recovery and independence. So it's got a significant focus on streamlining our processes. It's a very large investment in building staff capability and empathy for clients, and I'll talk to you a little bit about how we're going about that, and also about providing new service offerings for our clients to support their recovery and independence goals. So there's five distinct streams through the service program. The first is called First Service, and that's been about streamlining our claims acceptance process, so the eligibility and claims acceptance process. Claims acceptance was taking up to 70 days. Clients had to fill out a 14-page hard copy claim form, so there was lots of backwards and forwards. There were 200 separate questions. Now clients no longer have to fill out a hard copy claim form, and 80% of claims, our target is to accept 80% of claims within 5 days. So that's a very, very significant change. So that's about getting claims much sooner than we've had before and being able to intervene with clients really quickly. There's a second stream, which is around, which is called Right Payments, which is about making sure that we are able to pay our providers as quickly as possible. So as you can see there, 40% of incoming calls were coming from providers about chasing up where their accounts were up to. So this is about now ensuring that we can pay accounts within 14 days. I talked a little bit before around pathways for mental health and persistent pain. So in the past, the only option for clients was one-to-one psychiatry or psychology. Now we're expanding those service offerings to things like e-therapy, outreach services, and so on, before you get to psychologists. The fourth stream is called streamlined decisions. So in the past, clients have had to seek prior approval for their services. This is a really significant change where services are now pre-approved. So there are seven services that we've started with. So you can see the acupuncture, chiro, psych and physio, those sorts of services, so treatment services. So about ensuring that clients can get access to the services that they require as quickly as possible so that they can recover and get their lives back on track. And then the last stream is called customer service, and that's got a number of components, but it's got a core coaching component as well as a new curriculum. So we've introduced core quality coaching as a part of that, and a very significant focus on coaching broadly across our staff. And that's across all of Claim. So just in terms of the recovery structure today, how the branch is structured. So essentially clients are streamed by return to work or non-return to work. So they come in now via first service, so through that new eligibility process. So we've had fantastic examples of people having accidents in the morning. There was one recently where somebody had an accident at 6:30, had their claim accepted at 10:30 on that same day. So that's a spectacular improvement, if you can imagine the backwards and forwards that used to occur. So clients come in via first service, and then they go to one of a number of teams. If they require very minimal return to work support, they go through to early support, where clients are generally returned their job attached, and they largely return to work within 6 months. Based on some predictive factors, if it seems, and things like injuries, if clients are unlikely to return to work within 6 months, they're streamed to the return to work teams, so specialist return to work teams, portfolios of around 70. If they're going to get back to work and they don't require any assistance, then they're streamed through the client assist team, so that's that large volume team. And we also have client focus at the bottom, which is basically our risk area, so they oversee the claims that sit in client assist as well. There's also a stream called return to health, which is where clients don't have return to work, that either children or the elderly. So just a little bit now around what's happened between when this presentation was last given and today. So just in terms of teams, there's been a rationalisation of teams. We've gone from 9 different teams down to 5. Quite a significant difference. We had complex and non-complex teams in the return to work space. That's now changed. We had complex and non-complex in the return to health area. That's changed now. That's been simplified as well. The client review team has gotten significantly smaller, and I'll talk to you a little bit about why that's happened. But a bit of a rationalisation now of the types of teams and the type of work that people are doing. This one's around the wrong way. So just talks to some of the tools and process differences. So on the right-hand side there, a client conversation tool was introduced in 2010. That's still in use, but it's a bit inconsistent, and its use has been inconsistent primarily because It's only now through the service program that we have some service offerings for clients. So people, you do it, you run clients through a tool, and you come out with, yep, there's a whole bunch of things here. If you don't have anywhere for them then to go, it tends to fall over reasonably quickly. So there's some significant change now with the client conversational tool, and also about making it smaller potentially. Also some changes around how we manage common law risk. So on the right-hand side, there was automatic identification at intact. That's now changed so that our algorithm has changed now to just be focused so on the no-fault component, and then there's an overlay at the three-month mark around common law potential. We did have shared KPIs with the area of the business that manages lump sum and common law. That's been changed now so that the recovery branch has its own targets around the impact on common law. This one's around the right way again. So just in terms of proactive data analytics, we have a whole number of factors. It's just been refined, essentially, using triggers like cost, age of claim, recent activity. And because of the change in structure now, with much smaller portfolios, there's much more proactive management. So that's partly why we were able to reduce the size of that client review team and have them just focus in the high volume part of the branch, in that client assist part of the branch. In terms of the segmentation algorithm, there's been some significant changes, as I said before, in terms of stripping out the common law part, so just focusing on the no-fault part, so just around the return to work capacity and the severity of injury, and then running a separate piece around common law risk. So that's some of the changes that have occurred from 2011 to today. In terms of some of the objectives, so our three corporate objectives are around, as I said before, client outcomes, client experience and scheme viability. So I'll just take you through these reasonably quickly. In terms of client satisfaction, for the annual survey this year, we achieved a record score of 7.63. So that's the highest that the organisation has achieved since measuring client sat, which is very exciting. All teams within the branch achieved significant improvement, and the attributes that sat underneath, so attributes of keeping people up to date, resolving their issues, treating them as individuals, and empathy, have all improved over time. And the score is the result of long-term change. So you can see there that just graphs our improvement over time in terms of client satisfaction. So 7.63 there is the highest score. In 2009, there, June 2009, there was a score of 7.62. That was when the organisation moved to Geelong, in the year that we moved, and we had significant double hatting of positions at that time. So there were twice as many people. So it's, so to have a score of 7.63 is an outstanding result. Really importantly, there's been some significant shifts by life of claim. So you can see there, particularly in the 0 to 12 month group, so a satisfaction now of 8.6, so for people newly injured. And all segments have improved over time. Just in terms of return to work, there's just with the teams that specifically manage return to work, a very significant improvement as well. So, and the highest ever score achieved in those teams. From a scheme viability perspective, initial results were really positive, but in the last 18 months, both income and paramedical benefits have been under some pressure. The full impact of the recovery model on return to work and common law won't be known or fully realised until 3 to 4 years after implementation. So that's around now. So so ISCAR are doing some work with us, and that inf- that information should be available to our board early in the new year around the impact of the model on common law. Returning clients to work is one of the major focuses for the branch and is key to achieving future savings in common law. The main indicator of that for us has been around income durations, and so the result for our full year was slightly above target at 41% or so. So our income durations are reasonably consistent. Over the last 12 months, we've had some issues with paramedical payments, particularly for deficit-based services, so services like home services, gardening, childcare, those sorts of services. And there has been some increase in the number of services per client and the number of clients receiving services. One of the issues that we've come across is in terms of the way that claims are segmented, that we've asked people very clearly to focus on things like return to work. So we've said to our rehab coordinators, your role is to focus on return to work. I mean, sometimes that's meant that our rehab coordinators have provided significant support over an extended period of time and then haven't withdrawn some of that support. So once clients have actually returned to work. So there's a significant focus on that as we move forward. This slide is just around the percentage of clients that are returning to work using an outcome, our tool called the RAP. So the RAP is that recovery action plan focused on barriers and interventions, and the results there are relatively stable. In terms of common law settlement size, the common law has largely, from a unit cost perspective, has largely stabilised, and the recovery branch has an impact. The three measures of common law that we use are around unit cost, granting rate and lodgement. Where we have most impact is around unit cost, so about returning people to work and health as quickly as possible and as sustainably as possible. In terms of client outcomes, so we've started, so over the last few years we've introduced a new client outcomes index, which we'll hear about over the next couple of days. For the way that index is used at the TAC, about a third of it sits in the independence branch and two-thirds is in the recovery branch. So the measures that we're using in the recovery branch are around self-assessed mental and physical health, as well as self-assessed return to work. It's Christmas time. As well as income durations and participation. So it's fairly new days in terms of how we measure client outcomes. Some of the measures that we're using, we've used measures like the SF12, the Life Back on Track, and the EQ5D. So those are the sorts of measures that we've been using, as well as those more standard measures around scheme participation and durations. Just in terms of, I'll go through this reasonably quickly in the interest of time, just in terms of some of the learnings. So the recovery model focused on organisational structure, focused on rules and processes within that structure and moving claims around. It also focused on strategies, work practices and interventions employed in managing claims. And the learning is largely that we need to spend more time looking at C. So looking at the strategies, work practices and interventions around managing claims. So that structures and claims pathways aren't enough, the focus areas and actions undertaken within that structure are the key to delivering outcomes. Over time, we've had a more sophisticated view of risk, and the claims management model needs to examine both the scheme viability risk as well as the client experience and client outcome risk. And so that's quite a significant change for our model. In terms of risk identification and services, it's about having the tools and services to more effectively meet our clients' needs, for instance, like the pathway for mental health services. So if you just have really good tools, like the client conversational tool, but you don't have any pathway, the tool isn't all that meaningful. Regardless of the quality of tools or processes available, they won't deliver results unless the people involved understand, use and believe in the new model and approach. So change management is really important. And we're still, 3 years on, we're still doing lots of work around change. And change isn't just about employing more change people. It's about genuinely embedding change. Just in terms of where we're headed as well. So from here, we're looking at a future where the majority of our clients self-navigate the system, so moving away from being the holder of purse strings, and Paul this morning, as well as others over the day, have talked about empowerment clients and being able to self-navigate the system. A fundamental shift away from scrutinising each individual change, each individual claim, sorry. So we've started that journey with streamlined decisions, so clients can access the services that they need without having to seek approval in the first instance. A focus on the whole ecosystem, more sophisticated analytics around risk, and ensuring that we have a model that aligns to the future of disability in Australia, where clients have more choice and empowerment. So that's where our model has come from and is headed to in the near future. So thanks everybody, thanks for coming along.
Really interesting, Damien. Burning questions?
Thanks, Damien. Just a question on the claim lodgement process, where you've removed the claim forms and things. Can you just talk through the lodgement process now?
Yep.
And whether you think that captures enough information for your claims assessors to make the decisions, and whether as a consequence of whatever your new process is, whether you think there's opportunity for more fraud or less fraud in your claims process?
Yep. So as I said, we've gone from a process of 200 odd questions, a process where we manually sent the form out. Then we waited for the form to come back, and that's now been reduced to about 50 questions in total. There's provisional acceptance of claims, as well as a first income payment early on. So there's a first income payment that's almost made immediately, with a number of tiers that then run through that. So it's been a really significant process internally of challenging issues around risk and issues around fraud. So there's been lots of conversations, as you can imagine, with our legal friends around ensuring that that risk is accounted for and that we haven't impacted the incidence of fraud. There are a few things that were very specific for us around blood alcohol levels and so on. So there was some really significant work done around exposing myths, really. So there was lots of fear, there were lots of myths around accepting claims much sooner. So it's been about blowing some of those up. We have a hospital lodgement process as well as a non-hospital lodgement process. The hospital lodgement process is largely run through hospitals, so there's very minimal risk there. And then it's also about gathering appropriate information throughout that claims journey. So there are, with non-hospitalised clients, there's still a phone-based lodgement process, so you're still talking to clients. You're still then following up information. It's handed over to one of our claims advisors or rehab coordinators very quickly as well, so they're talking to clients very very quickly as well. So rather than that 70-day protracted period, it's now, you know, within days, and they're having very different conversations with people, establishing relationships differently.
Now, I'm sorry to cut some discussion short. You now know who Damien is, so by all means, chase him up over the remainder of the conference, because I know how helpful it is for the TAC people to share their experiences. So in the interests of satisfying the conference organising Nazis, we'll thank Damien now, and I'll pass out his wine.